In our first introductory session on the book of Proverbs, we spent the time thinking about some reasons for studying the book of Proverbs, and then we thought about some of the particular challenges that we face in doing that. The aim of this second introductory study is to get better acquainted with the book of Proverbs itself, so that we'll be able to navigate our way around it. And we're actually going to be greatly helped in that by watching two short videos from the Bible Project. I really can't recommend highly enough the Bible Project. If you've never seen it before, it's very simple. Just go onto YouTube, search Bible Project, and all these videos will come up overviewing books in the Bible. And we're going to be coming to that later. But what I want to do to begin is just to get you to open your Bible at the book of Proverbs, and we're going to note certain key marker verses. Naturally enough, the first one is Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1, which reads as follows: "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel." And that is, of course, the title that is given to the book. And what follows from chapter 1, verse 1 onwards is a block of 9 chapters of speeches or lectures from a father to a son. And this forms the prologue of the book of Proverbs. It's long, it's 9 chapters long. But the second verse I want you to mark then is chapter 10, verse 1. And it says this: "The Proverbs of Solomon." Now, this section of the book of Proverbs goes right through from chapter 10, verse 1, to chapter 22, verse 16. And it's a part of the book that we would be very familiar with, in the sense of we'll recognize the punchy, pithy sayings that we associate with the book of Proverbs. Several hundred of them are given in that section of the book. Our next marker verse then is Proverbs 22 and verse 17. It says, "Pay attention and listen to the sayings of the wise. Apply your heart to what I teach." Now, we're told in verse 20 then of chapter 22 that there are 30 separate sayings of the wise in this section, whoever the wise were. Now, our next marker verse, turn to Proverbs 24 and verse 23. And if you're using the NIV, these are sections are well set out for you to notice. But here's the statement, verse 23 of chapter 24. "These also are the sayings of the wise." And this is a very brief little section, and it records some more sayings from these anonymous wise individuals. Next marker verse, Proverbs 25, verse 1. "These are more proverbs of Solomon, copied by the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah." So what we're coming to now is another collection of Solomon's wisdom, which has been put together some approximately 3 centuries later by men in the royal court of King Hezekiah. Turn to chapter 30 and verse 1. It reads as follows: "The sayings of Agur, son of Jakeh, an oracle." That's the 6th section. And then finally, chapter 31, verse 1, the sayings of King Lemuel, an oracle his mother taught him. The point of that little exercise there is to show you that the book of Proverbs is actually a collection of seven different collections of proverbs, of wise sayings. In other words, the book of Proverbs is a treasury, a compendium of wisdom sayings. Now, the main man, of course, is Solomon. He both authored it and he also compiled wise sayings. And this, of course, should come as no surprise to us whatsoever. And I want to spend some time just reading with you some verses from the Old Testament which show us why it's no surprise that Solomon played this pivotal role in presenting these wise sayings. 1 Kings chapter 3, we're going to read from verses 5 to 12. 1 Kings chapter 3, reading from verse 5. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." Solomon answered, "You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?" The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, "Since you have asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be." Turn over, please, to the next chapter, to 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the men of the East, and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than any other man, including Ethan the Ezraite, wiser than Heman, Calcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol. And his fame spread to all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. He described plant life, from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of walls. He also taught about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. Finally, 1 Kings chapter 10, just two verses, 23 and 24. 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 23 says, "King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. The whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom God had put in his heart. Now, what we're going to do at this point is we're going to watch a little 8-minute video from the Bible Project, just overviewing the book of Proverbs and how it's put together, and it's truly wonderful. So enjoy that.
The book of Proverbs. The word proverb typically refers to a short, clever saying that offers some kind of wisdom, and this book has a lot of those. But they're almost all in the center section of the book, chapters 10 to 29. But there is way more going on in the book of Proverbs, especially at the beginning, chapters 1 through 9, and the conclusion, chapters 30 and 31. The book's been designed with an introduction, chapter 1, verses 1 through 9, and it first of all links this book to King Solomon. Now remember the story in 1 Kings chapter 3. Solomon had asked God for wisdom to lead Israel well. And so Solomon became known as the wisest man in the ancient world, and we're told in 1 Kings chapter 4 that he wrote thousands of proverbs and poems and collected knowledge about plants and animals. So Solomon was like the fountainhead of Israel's wisdom literature. So while not all the material in this book is written by him personally, he is where Israel's wisdom tradition began. The introduction says that by reading this book, you too can gain wisdom. Now, wisdom for most of us means knowledge, but the Hebrew word chokmah means much more than just mental activity. It refers to action also. So think skill or applied knowledge. This is why, back in the book of Exodus, chapter 31, it was artists and craftsmen in Israel who were said to have chokmah. So the purpose of this book is to help you develop a set of practical skills for living well in God's world. And this gets linked with another key idea in the introduction, the fear of the Lord. Now, fear here is not about terror. It's about a healthy sense of reverence and awe for God and about my place in the universe. It's a moral mindset that recognizes I am not God and that I don't get to make up my own definitions of good and evil and right and wrong. Rather, I need to humble myself before God and embrace God's definition of right and wrong, even when that's inconvenient for me. Now, this introduction leads us into the first main section of the book, chapters 1 through 9, which also doesn't contain short one-liner proverbs. Rather, what we find here are 10 speeches from a father to a son about how the son should listen to wisdom and cultivate the fear of the Lord and live accordingly, which means a life of virtue and integrity and generosity, all of which lead to success and peace. The father warns his son also about folly and evil and stupid decisions that will breed selfishness and pride, all leading to ruin and shame. And so the son should make the pursuit of wisdom and the fear of the Lord his highest goal in life. And this way of thinking, it forms the moral logic of this entire book. Now, these speeches from the father also clue us into what biblical wisdom literature is and how it's different from other parts of the Bible. These books explore how to live well in God's world, but wisdom is not the same as law, like what Moses gave Israel at Mount Sinai. And it's not the same as prophecy, divine speech to God's people. Rather, wisdom literature has the accumulated insight of God's people through the generations about how to live in a way that honors God and others. And so, through the book of Proverbs now, these human words about wisdom have been put together as God's word and wisdom to his people, which connects to the other thing you find in chapters 1 through 9. There are 4 poems from Lady Wisdom. Here, wisdom has been poetically personified as a woman who calls out to humanity to pay attention and to seek her. Wisdom says that she is woven into the fabric of the universe, and so wherever you see people making wise decisions, they are relying on her. So you see someone being generous or having sexual integrity or upholding justice, they are drawing on wisdom. These Lady Wisdom poems, they're a creative, poetic way of exploring this idea that we live in God's moral universe, and that goodness and justice are objective realities that we ignore to our own peril. And so fearing the Lord, living wisely, it's living along the grain of the universe. Now together, these 2 sets of speeches from the Father and Lady Wisdom, they make a powerful claim about this book, that you're not simply reading good advice, you're reading God's own invitation to learn wisdom from previous generations. And so in the next section of the book, chapters 10 through 29, we find hundreds of ancient proverbs, and they apply wisdom and the fear of the Lord to every life topic you could imagine: family, work, neighborhood, friendship, sex, marriage, money, anger, forgiveness, alcohol, debt, everything. And these are all filtered through the value system of Proverbs 1 through 9. Now, these Proverbs, they're all pretty short. They're easy to memorize. And actually, this section of the book is meant to become a reference work that you return to time and time again throughout the years, which raises some important issues in learning how to read these Proverbs. First of all, Proverbs are by nature about probabilities. So you fear the Lord and you make wise, good choices, things will likely go well for you. And if you don't fear the Lord, you're foolish, your life will likely not go so well. Now, that is all often true, but not always. Which leads to the next point, that Proverbs are not promises. They're not formulas for success. So, some Proverbs, for example. The fear of the Lord prolongs your life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. Or, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't turn from it. So yes, fearing God, being a moral person, will most likely lead to a better, longer life, and raising your kids in a stable, loving home does set them up well, but there are no guarantees. Lots of things can and often do go wrong in our world. And so lastly, Proverbs by nature focus on the general rule, but not the exceptions, which are many. And the wisdom books actually aren't ignorant of that. The exceptions are what the other wisdom books, Job and Ecclesiastes, are all about. And together, these acknowledge that life is too complex for simple formulas, which is why we need all of the wisdom books together to get the bigger picture. This all leads to the final section of the book, two large collections of poems. First, poems from a man named Agur, who begins by acknowledging his own ignorance and folly and his great need for God's wisdom. And then Agur discovers that divine wisdom has been given to him in the scriptures, which teach him how to live well. And so Agur is put before us as like a model reader of the book of Proverbs, somebody who's always open to hearing God's wisdom through the scriptures. The final poems are connected to a man named Lemuel. He's a non-Israelite king. And he passes on the wisdom that was given to him by his mom. It's guidance for being a wise and just leader. And then the final poem is an acrostic or an alphabet poem where each line begins with a new letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And the entire poem's about the woman of noble character. It depicts a woman who lives according to the wisdom of Proverbs and stands like a model of someone who takes God's wisdom and then translates it into practical decisions in everyday life, at work or at home, in her family and in her community. So the book opened with words from a father to a son about listening to Lady Wisdom, and so now the book closes by offering the words of a mother to her son about a woman who lives wisely. The book of Proverbs is for every person in every season of life. It's a guide for living wisely and well in God's good world, and that's what the book of Proverbs is all about.
We noted earlier that Solomon was the main author of Proverbs. But as we saw, he was not its sole author. We do not know who the wise were. Neither do we know anything about Agur and King Lemuel, who are mentioned at the two closing chapters of the book. Going by their names and the fact that we know nothing about Lemuel as a king, they were non-Israelites. So we see that Solomon both created and compiled wise sayings. And that actually raises an important theological point about the book of Proverbs. Proverbs adopts and adapts certain wise sayings that even originated outside of the covenant community. Now, that may come as a surprise to you. Actually, the clearest case of this comes in the case of the so-called 30 sayings of the wise, which we get chapter 24, verse 23 onwards. These sayings closely resemble an ancient Egyptian document called the Instruction of Amen-Imop. It also has 30 sayings. 30 was a holy number in ancient Egypt. And its similarities to the 30 sayings of the wise in the book of Proverbs, they are too many and too close for this just to be a coincidence. But, and this is all important that we understand this, yes, this type of instructional wisdom literature that we find in the book of Proverbs, it was common enough in the ancient Near East at that time. Common enough in the nations that surrounded Israel. But only Israel anchored its instruction on wisdom in the fear of the Lord. Israel's practical wisdom, because Proverbs is a practical book about how to live life well, but this most practical of books had deep theological roots. Other nations had plenty to say about how to get on and live life well, much of it eminently sensible. You know, don't be a thief. But that instructional wisdom literature, common in the nations surrounding Israel at this time, lacked the brilliant clarity of the light given to Israel. Proverbs was not and is not merely a collection of wise sayings and good advice that everyone would sort of tip their hat at and agree with. Yes, common grace, God's common grace given to men, ensured that they could make sensible enough judgments about life at one level. But the book of Proverbs goes further, and it is special revelation from God instructing us in how to be wise at the most fundamental level of all. All Proverbs' wisdom sayings, all of them, are to be understood through the matrix of the fear of the Lord, the acknowledgement of Jehovah, the one true, living, and sovereign Lord. So the book of Proverbs shares a relationship with the other wisdom literature of the time, but with that crucial difference. But the book of Proverbs, as wisdom literature as it's called, it's also related, it also has a relationship with the other wisdom literature that is contained within the Old Testament itself. There are two other books in the Old Testament that also reflect upon life in our world. And these other two books, they fill out the perspective that Proverbs presents, and they're to be read alongside the perspective that Proverbs presents, because the book of Proverbs, as we'll see as we go through it, it presents what we would maybe call an idealistic or optimistic or righteous or moral perspective on life. And it's balanced out by both Job with its question of suffering and Ecclesiastes with what's the purpose, the meaning in it all. These go together. And what we're going to do now is we're going to watch the second, it's just a 4-minute video, the second little video from the Bible Project, just showing how the book of Proverbs is one of those three books in the Old Testament that we characterize and classify as wisdom literature.
There are three books in the Bible that have come to be called the wisdom literature: Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job.
And all of these books are addressing the same set of questions. What kind of world are we living in? And what does it look like to live well in this world?
So, how to be good at life?
Yeah. So each of these books tackles these questions from a unique perspective, and it's important to understand all of them to get a fully biblical perspective on the good life. So as a thought experiment, you could actually imagine each of these books as a person. So Proverbs would be like this brilliant young teacher, and Ecclesiastes the sharp middle-aged critic, and Job would be this weathered old man who's seen a lot in his day.
We're going to start by meeting the book of Proverbs, the brilliant young teacher. And she's not just smart, she's smart about everything: work, relationships, sex, spirituality. She has incredible insights, things you wouldn't see on your own.
Yeah, she would be the perfect friend to have around when you need really specific advice.
So what makes her so smart?
Well, Proverbs can see things that most people don't see. She believes that there's an invisible creative force in the universe that can guide people in how they should live. And you can't see it, just like you can't see gravity, but it affects everything that we do.
So what's this force?
Well, in Hebrew, it's called chokhmah, and it usually gets translated into English as wisdom. It's an attribute of God that God used to create the world. And chokhmah has been woven into the fabric of things and how they work. So wherever people are making good or just or wise decisions, they're tapping into chokhmah.
And whenever someone's making a bad decision, they're working against chokhmah.
Right, or as it says in Proverbs chapter 1, the waywardness of fools will destroy them, but the one who listens to wisdom lives in security.
So it's like a moral law of the universe.
Yeah, it's a cause-effect pattern, and no one can escape it. And Proverbs personifies all of this as a woman.
Yeah, Lady Wisdom.
Right, and she roams around the earth, calling out, making herself available to anyone who's willing to listen to her and to learn. Which leads to the second thing Proverbs believes: that anyone can access and interact with wisdom and use it to make a beautiful life for yourself or for others.
You can create with it like a designer.
Yes, in fact, chokhmah in Hebrew isn't simply intellectual knowledge. The word is also used to describe a skilled artisan who excels at their craft, like woodworking or stonemasonry. So you show you possess chokhmah when you put it to work and develop the skill of making a good life.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's do this. Let's go find some wisdom.
But before you do, Proverbs has one more really important thing to consider. Chokhmah isn't some impersonal force. It's an attribute of God himself. And so in Hebrew thought, your journey to becoming wise has to begin with what Proverbs calls the fear of the Lord. It's this healthy respect for God's definition of good and evil. And true wisdom means learning those boundary lines and not crossing them.
Now, all those ideas you just unpacked are in chapters 1 through 9 in Proverbs. But when I think of the book of Proverbs, I think of the collection of sayings, the Proverbs themselves. Tell me about those.
Yeah, those are what you find in chapters 10 on to the end of the book. It's a collection of hundreds and hundreds of proverbs about any and all aspects of life. And chokhmah gets applied to them, resulting in this wise guidance to help you find a path towards success, and no matter what you do.
If I design my life with these sayings, life is going to be good.
Yeah, or as Proverbs puts it, it'll give health to your bones, prosperity, a long, rich life.
Which is a really big claim.
But you can see how it's often the case. Wise people, they tend to do better. Things usually work out well for them in life. And so that is the promise and the wisdom of the book of Proverbs.
The book of Proverbs is really beautiful. But if we take a step back, some people would argue it's a little too simplistic. Because sometimes horrible things happen to really wise people, and sometimes foolish people get rewarded. It doesn't always work the way we think it should work.
That's right. Which is why we need to go and listen to our next wise friend, Ecclesiastes the critic. Because he's wrestled with that very problem, and he's going to push us further in our journey to find the good life.
Well, I hope you found the two little videos useful. I think they're excellent. And what I would suggest now, for next time, you may want to watch those two videos again, but take some time also to watch their little overview videos on both the book of Job and Ecclesiastes. And you'll get that, as they call them, the sort of, well, what about when life doesn't work out like this, the sort of, you know, the exceptions and how does it all fit together? I really recommend that you do that. But in respect of the book of Proverbs itself, our next two studies are going to be in the prologue of the book. That's the first 9 chapters. So what I would ask is that over the next week or so that you would spend time just reading the first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs.